MechCast, Tuesday, June 25th, 2013. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Glad to be back with you once again. I have a really cool episode for you today because I invited a couple of my friends on to talk about pretty much anything that came to our mind. This is one of those episodes that we do from time to time. As a matter of fact, some of you asked if we could do another one of these episodes, which is why I'm doing it now, where we invite some smart folks in this time around. I've got Ken Ray from macOS Ken and David Sparks from MacSparky.com, Mac Power Users Podcast. And we just go over anything that might be on our minds. As a matter of fact, you'll hear in the first part of this discussion that we immediately went off topic. We kind of loosely have an outline, just some ideas of some things that we might talk about, but very rarely do we stick to that. And that was certainly was the case this time around. But it's a lot of fun to just kind of go over what's going on in Apple and Mac news and just the things that we're sort of thinking about. And I know you enjoy them because I get a lot of great feedback from you, and I hope you enjoy this one as well. But before we dive into that, I need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is ShareFile by Citrix. In your business, you are constantly working on various projects, and for most of us, that doesn't mean working alone. You're collaborating, right? You have coworkers, you maybe have clients, you have people that are helping you with your projects, and a big part of that work is often sharing files, things like contracts or spreadsheets, presentations, PDFs, and those documents are critical to what you're working on, and it's essential that you are able to share those files and collaborate, but also you need to know what's going on with those documents. You need to know that when you're sharing them, they're safe, they're secure, they're under your control. And that's really why I recommend checking out ShareFile by Citrix. It's an easy-to-use business solution that allows you to exchange your files quickly and easily, but also do it securely and with the peace of mind of knowing that they're getting where they need to go, that the folks who need to have the information have it, and that they've opened it and that they've looked at it. Along with all the security, though, you also get a lot of versatility. With ShareFile, you can manage your documents and share your files through a web interface. You can do it on your desktop with your Mac, your PC. You can even manage documents and share files through your smartphone using their mobile apps. They have apps for Android, iOS, BlackBerry, Windows. They also have great Outlook integration and desktop widgets that make sending and sharing your files really easy. I love the sync features for working with my clients because I know that when I send a file request and we have a project change, that everyone in the group has the latest versions of the documents that they need. I also love being able to control who has access to the files and documents within a project. So I know that the correct people are getting the information and those who don't need that information aren't seeing it. So that adds to that security. And I've also found that my clients feel more comfortable using ShareFile because I can set up a branded site with a URL and my logo for them to upload and send their files or download their files from. And plus, being Citrix, it's that great brand. They're known for their business tools. They've been providing solutions for years. It just gives them that peace of mind when they're using the service. And that's important. That adds validity to what I do and helps my clients feel safe and secure when they're sharing their documents with me. So I think ShareFile is really worth taking a look at. It's a different approach to your business file sharing. And with my special offer code, you can try it free for 30 days. There's no obligation. You just go to sharefile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter my promo code MACCAST. Remember, visit sharefile.com and type in MACCAST, M-A-C-C-A-S-T. And a big thank you to ShareFile and Citrix for their support of the MACCAST. So now let's dive into the show. Let's sit down and have a little chat with Dave Sparks and Ken Ray from macOS Ken. Well, here we are at a special MacCast. I had been having some requests from some of you to get some more folks on the show. It's been a while since we've kind of done a little roundtable thing. Back in the day, we used to do these with Victor Callao and Ken Ray. I've got Ken Ray back now. Hey, Ken, how's it going?
Going all right. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. And we also brought in Dave Sparks.
I'm so stressed right now. I don't know how I could fill Victor's shoes.
Well, the good news is I also reached out to Victor. He was busy, but he said in the future he would be open to joining us sometime. So I'm hoping to coax him back to the mic for a little bit.
I'm out with Victor, and he has some very attractive shoes, and I just don't think I could fill them.
Well, now, if you're looking to fill his shoes, though, just lead off by predicting an Apple television.
Oh, there you go.
Apple TV next week. Boom.
An HD television.
Boom. And he drops the mic and he's out of there. So.
Yeah. I'm wondering, and I think John Martellaro, I haven't read the piece, but he posted something on Apple's TV plans, and I think specifically maybe related to displays. But, I mean, at what point does, like, an Apple 4K LCD cinema display just, you know, become an Apple TV thing when you hook up some sort of box to it or something like that?
Hmm. I guess at the moment that you hook some kind of box to it. Yeah. Isn't the issue, though, that you can't?
Cable stations, but aren't we moving away from that?
Doesn't everybody
want to cut the cord? I do.
Doesn't everybody want to cut the cord? Sure. I was moving away from that 2 weeks ago, and then Apple introduced programming to the Apple TV that is only available if you have a cable subscription.
I know.
And so now I'm actually, and I joked about this on macOS Ken, but I'm actually now considering getting HBO just because then I can have all the seasons of Deadwood and all the seasons of Rome and all the seasons of 6 Feet Under and all the shows that I haven't seen since years ago when I had HBO, because now I have them all, or I would have them all through Apple TV if I had HBO. So I love the idea that we're moving away from that. But Apple, it just one day, suddenly moved everybody, you know, back closer to it.
I'm totally with you there. I talked about that. I want HBO to do the in-app subscription thing. Like, yes. Can I just pay you $20 a month for your shows and nobody else's? Because that's all I really care about.
It seems unrealistic to me for people to think that Apple can wave a wand and get people that are on this 50-year-old business plan to just, like, do a 180.
I don't think anybody expected that Apple was going to do that. But I honestly, what I figured they were going to do, you had the guys from the CW announcing earlier this year that they're going to have a tile on Apple TV and it's not going to require a cable subscription.
Awesome. And that, when is that happening?
Well, sometime later this year is what they said. My assumption would be that they're doing it before the fall launch.
Yeah.
You know, because they'll have a bunch of new shows that they want people watching. Those shows are going to be made available the following day. They are going to be ad supported. So basically it's like Hulu, except just for CW stuff, and you don't have to pay anything, and you don't have to prove that you have a cable subscription. But that is how I figured this was going to happen. I mean, yeah, think about when they launched video on the iPod, all right? And when they launched video on iTunes, it was cute. I think they had 4 ABC shows and some like Disney shorts and some Pixar shorts.
Yep.
And I believe that was about it. And then within a year, you've got content from all the major networks, I think. And then, you know, now it's difficult to find a show. It's not difficult to find a show, but I mean, more often than not, the show you're looking for is available on iTunes. So, I mean, that's how I figured we would eventually get to the cord cutting, as you'd start with something like that nobody really cares about, like the CW.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I'm coming from. It seems to me it's independent content mm-hmm. developers who are going to be aggressive about trying to get on there. And I don't think Apple's really built the pipes yet for them to do it, at least on the Apple TV. But when you think about how much easier it is to get into production these days, and the equipment is cheaper and the software is cheaper, and you can make something really high quality. I mean, I'm looking at YouTube and I see kids that are running a lightsaber on YouTube, and it looks like the old Star Wars movies. The quality is as good, if not better. So it seems to me it's just a question of time before we get those independent content developers, and then maybe wean ourselves off the networks.
You know, the only problem with that, though, is, and I don't know if this was a Steve Jobs thing, and so it would be different going forward, or if this is just an Apple thing, as much as Jobs liked to say he was an outsider, and as much as, you know, they like to be the, you know, the company that thought different, when Apple added podcasts to iTunes with in 2005, whatever that was, iTunes 4.3 or something. It was a point release. It wasn't a full release, but they added podcasts to iTunes, and then they did this big deal about how Steve Jobs is going to do a podcast interview, and it's like, oh, who would he do a podcast interview with? Oh, ABC.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, you know, you say, well, this is a great shot for independent, you know, people. It is a great shot for independent people, but who Apple, you know, so far has wanted to be in bed with is not, you know, hey, indie publisher, come with me. I mean, it was five publishers. The five of the six biggest publishers in the country is who they got, you know, together with for iBooks. And yes, you can publish yourself, as some people on this call know. But I mean, they still want to be with the big guys. So I don't think independent is the way to go. But something like a CW, or, you know, well, it's not the WB anymore, because it used to be the WB and now it's the CW. Yeah. Independent, but not independent, if that makes any sense.
Well, you know, I'm jumping media here, but I would say, with my experience in the bookstore, it proves that they're very supportive of the independents, at least that are selling books. I've had great support. I mean, they named the book Best of 2002, and there was nobody over here to impress. You know, it's me working out of my kitchen. So,
wait, 2012?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah, but
because that would be a neat trick.
Well, the time machine broke, so they just decided to leave in 2012.
Okay, that's very nice. Don't misunderstand. I was not by any stretch of the imagination belittling what you were saying.
I didn't take it that way.
You're doing. Okay, good.
But I do think that Apple is trying to reach out to some of these independents, and I hope that goes to a video eventually. I don't see any evidence in the video market just yet, but seems to me that's the next place. I watch my kids. It's really educational for me seeing how they consume media. And when they have an hour, they don't turn on the TV. They go to YouTube.
Mm.
And that's the media they like. And they have favorite channels on YouTube. And there's, you know, guys who make goofy videos. And they're funny, and they're not very well produced. Well, some of them are, but most of them aren't. But they enjoy that more than they enjoy anything on ABC, NBC, CBS, whatever.
I guess I would go a couple of ways, though. The things that I wonder are, well, I'm not saying that Apple wouldn't be supportive of independent video if they ever actually started doing video stuff, or, you know, started trying to wean people off of cable. I don't think, though, that's how they're going to make it happen. It's sort of the same thing. Well, I mean, like you're saying with the publishers, I mean, they didn't come out that day and say, you know, here, we're opening the iBook store and we have this way for somebody just like you to make a book. I mean, it was about a year before they came out with iBook Publisher, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
No, it just seems to me they're going to want to start, you know, huge. They're going to want to start big. They're not going to want to start with, we saw this guy on YouTube and we thought he was great, so we gave him $100,000 in the studio. I mean,
you're right.
That's just my thinking on it. Not to say that there's not going to be a place there for people to play. The question then, though, is, I mean, there's something in it for them, for you to do well as a book publisher. They get 30% of your sales. And, you know, that's awesome. And I'm not saying, well, they're screwing you. You should be getting 90% of your sales. I mean, they're getting 30%. And so there's something in it for them. They took podcasts back in 2005 and they made a nice place for it. And then I think they've updated that place a couple of times and they've made one app. Otherwise, they haven't really done a lot to support podcasting. They haven't destroyed it, which is great, but they haven't done a lot to, you know, support podcasting, I would say.
Yeah, but at the same time, who else is doing anything more, too? I mean...
Well, who else is allowed to?
Well, I mean, you've got Android on more devices than anything else. I, this is only coming up because I've been kind of working with somebody who's working on a project related to that, and he's been looking at the Android market for podcasts, and he asked me a couple times about it, and I'm like, I have no idea what that market's like. Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding, after digging into it a little bit more, there's like nothing.
Big, well,
like, I mean, there's a few apps that are good players, but you still are lacking... You know, and we sort of had a chance with Zune Marketplace, or what was Zune, the Zune thing called? Zune?
I don't remember. I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember. Yeah, BlackBerry came out with one, too.
Right.
Yeah, you know, for what that was worth. I feel certain that somebody is listening to this right now on that player, but they're probably one of about 10.
Yeah. With a show called Mac Power Users, I never really spent much time looking into that stuff.
Yeah.
I was actually very surprised how many BlackBerry listeners I had listening on Mac OS Con, because I said a big greeting to them the first day that they came on, and I got an email back from like four or five. Of course, they were people who were already using a Mac.
Sure.
Who were happy to, you know, have access to it on their BlackBerry at that point.
Right. But I think it's a much more difficult process. But I mean, I guess I'm kind of detracting away from where you guys were going with this. You know, I'm of the opinion of that you have, David, that, you know, at some point this is going to be a vehicle for a lot of and it's not just independent guys. I think there's big guys out there working in Hollywood right now who are getting really fed up with the whole process of the system. And I can't remember where I talked about this, but I know I've mentioned it to a few family members. I read something about Steven Spielberg and George Lucas going out and talking.
Yes.
Was it USC or one of the film schools?
I think it was in San Diego, and they said that the film industry is going to implode.
Yeah.
They said that, you know, even they're having trouble making movies, and there's so much of a financial investment to get a movie, and so much is riding on the first weekend that the whole industry is caving in on itself. And, you know, going back to Ken's point, what I was trying to say was, I think you're right, Ken. I think that, you know, Apple just giving it away or building a pipe isn't going to be enough. But if Apple says, hey, you want to make a TV show and sell it through us, we'll take 30%. And you know what? For the distribution, the bandwidth costs, and all that other stuff, I could see people doing it. It makes sense for me for books. I'm not sure it wouldn't make sense for people making movies. I think I just use like a quadruple negative. I'm really confused.
No, I don't think you're wrong as far as making movies or things like that. There's not. So I guess. So again, though, you're going to be starting with money.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, right.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's not. It's. I mean. If you have a computer and a lot of time or a lot of, you know, guts or a lot of, you know how, you can make an app, right? And I'm not saying that you're automatically going to be a millionaire, but I mean, the barrier to entry is fairly low there. Same with podcasting, but then blah, blah, blah. Do something else.
Well, yeah. You know what? What we're getting at, and where I think the cool thing is if you look at all these things, if you look at what's happened with iBooks, right, in the iBook store. So Dave's in there as an independent, and he's doing his thing. That's not precluding all of the big guys from being in there. And you're right, it started with the big guys.
Right.
You know, iTunes started with the big music people before podcasts got in there, and now we've got movies and TV shows. So I think, you know, you're both right. This is a long-term thing, but I think ultimately it's this democratization of Hollywood now is sort of the next phase of this, is that, yeah, you're going to have big studios who are going to put out their movies in theaters and do the traditional thing and eventually end up in some form in iTunes and on Amazon and all these other places. But there's also going to be this outlet for all those guys who have been slugging away trying to get something done, and they realize, hey, you know, why don't the group of us, you know, a director and some behind-the-scenes people and a couple good people doing talent, why don't we just produce this thing, we'll throw it on credit cards and roll the dice, and we'll try and sell it ourselves. And you're going to have some of that too. And it's just going to be like the app, you know, like app developers. There's going to be people that are going to be highly successful and make a lot of money with that model. And there's going to be a whole ton more that are, you know, try it and it doesn't work for them. But it's going to be an interesting ride nonetheless. And I think Apple is the only company I can think that's primed to really provide that for movies and TV content.
And what I'd add to that is the more Hollywood plays hard to get and makes it more difficult to, you know, to find a new business plan and a new way to make this work, the more likely Apple is to embrace something like that.
Right. And let me just bring it back. And the ultimate measure of this is a little bit of what you were alluding to, Dave, with your kids, you know, preferring YouTube. The audience is changing. And I think that's a lot what Spielberg and Lucas were responding to. And they mentioned that, well, technology and the audience is changing. So they mentioned the amazing thing from that interview that I got was that, like, E.T. was out for a year and 3 months in the theaters. Because
totally
that was the only way, that was the only way you could get it, right? But now we can get stuff everywhere. And to come back to what you were talking about with HBO, Ken, I was reading this thing. Torrent Freak, who monitors BitTorrents, I guess, said that the season premiere, the third season of Game of Thrones, was downloaded by 5.2 million people. And it was 6.7 million people that watched it on HBO. So almost the same number downloaded it illegally as watched it legally. And so that's where it baffles me why they don't see. They could have probably gained some money, I think, from those 5.2 million people. I didn't pirate it, but I would have loved to have pirated it. I'm going to wait for it to come out on iTunes, and I'm going to buy it. But somebody else did an article even said, why don't they just do the season pass thing where, you know, it's available on iTunes for people who want to buy it a la carte, you know, within some sort of reasonable amount of time after it airs. I mean, if they're looking to protect that cable thing, there's ways of going about that as opposed to, you know, putting it a year off or a year and a half off, and then people just get fed up and they pirate it. So this whole thing that we're talking about, I think, is just it's something that interests a lot of people, and I think a lot of us want to see change. And I think, for me personally, I think Apple's a company that could potentially bring that change and that disruption. And so I'm kind of excited about that thought. Do I think it's going to happen? And when do I think it's going to happen? I have no idea. I think will it happen eventually? I think it's going to be this slow, painful process. It's certainly not moving fast enough for me.
I just think it's kind of funny that we got into this whole conversation because I was talking about Victor's shoes.
I was just going to say, so Dave, that's how you fill in for Victor.
Yes, exactly. This is exactly how these things go. We have kind of no agenda, and it goes where it takes us, because we were supposed to start. We went right off the rails immediately, which was awesome,
yeah,
by the way. But we're supposed to start helping Ken out with a technical thing, because we were talking about Skype and computers running slow. And you mentioned you're thinking about doing a RAM upgrade.
I'm thinking about going from the 4 gigabytes of RAM that came with my early 2011 MacBook Pro to 16. And I've read online that it'll only support 12. Apple says that it's good for 12, but OWC and a couple of reviews I read on Amazon said that go ahead and throw 16 in there, because it'll pick it all up and it'll benefit you and it'll be fantastic. And you know, faster is going to be faster, but I'm probably going to do this once with this machine. So do I do 12 and then go, I wish I'd done 16? Or do I go ahead and do 16 and find out, yeah, it really would have been the same if I'd done 12? This is the question that I have.
Can you buy 12?
Can you buy 12? I think so. I assume so.
It's usually they're matched. I thought if you bought unmatched memory, that was bad.
Oh, well, then maybe that solves the whole problem for me. I don't know.
Well, there's you have like, what, 2 slots in there?
Yes.
Yeah. So RAM, you know, I'm a huge fan of the RAM upgrade. And you might have the same one that I have. I have a 2011 MacBook Pro. Is it the Thunderbolt model?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so I immediately upgraded mine to 8.
Okay.
And it's been great. I mean, 8's worked out well for me. I don't know what kind of heavy lifting you're doing, but I mean, my opinion is the more RAM, the better. Like, yeah, the more you can cram in there,
all right,
the better off you're going to be. So if it'll take 16 and will it recognize 16, or are they saying it's just going to recognize the 12 and then you're kind of done?
Everything that I've read says it will recognize the 16.
Yeah, then I would go for 16.
Apple, yeah. But Apple does not say that it supports 16.
And that's an extra $30 for you. I'm looking at the site now.
Yeah. Well, it depends on where you go. I read about it on OWC and I watched their video and I may end up buying from them. But I mean, I'm a price conscious sort. So I found places where I can get it for less that also have decent reviews.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible thing to say. I apologize. They're not a sponsor of yours, are they? Or are
who?
They? Who? Exactly.
Who did you say?
OWC.
No.
Okay.
But I love OWC. I buy stuff from them all the time.
I also love OWC. And yes, okay. So there. Maybe I'll buy from them then. Now I feel like a jerk. Oh.
No.
All right.
Actually, RAM, I most often buy my RAM from Crucial.com.
Okay.
But I will also occasionally buy from OWC. I usually buy hard drives from OWC. I know they have some really killer SSD drives that I've been.
Yeah.
Lusting after
They've got this one thing. So here's the thing. I finally got over my fear of opening up my computer, because one of the first times that I remember actually having to open a computer, I was scared to death. It was like 97. It was this Windows beige something or other that somebody had bought for my office, and it just kept like slowing down, bogging down, bogging down. And so our guy on the West Coast, because I was in Boston at the time, had memory delivered to me, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And so I opened that up and went into it, but it was not a pretty machine, and it was very easy to get into. And so I'm just, you know, cursing my slow as molasses MacBook Pro. And the only reason it's slow is because I leave almost everything open. Okay, so I know it's partly my fault, but at least once a night now, I'm having to force quit like five different applications before I go into record.
RAM will definitely help with that.
Yeah, I mean, in 2013...
Yeah.
Or 2003, if you have a time machine. 4 gigabytes is pretty low.
Yeah. Well, and I think the reason I actually went ahead with the 4 gigabytes when I bought this was because everybody said, oh, it'll be easy to upgrade it. And it'll be cheaper to upgrade it than it would be to buy it with more.
Yes, good advice.
Well, that is good advice, unless you're a freaky cat like me who doesn't want to open up his computer. But I finally watched the videos, like I say, and I'm kind of over that now. And so now that I'm over that fear, even though I haven't actually replaced the memory, OWC apparently has this thing where you can replace your combo drive with a solid state drive.
Yeah, now you're getting serious.
Now you're getting serious, but man, I mean, I can't tell you how tempted I am now thinking about it.
I did that to one of my MacBook Pros.
And
3 years ago. No problems. All right.
Yeah. That's not going to happen right away.
I had no leftover screws.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's...
no extra wires.
You know,
I got the mouse back in there right on the little trail thing.
With iFixit out there, the iFixit guides are just rock solid. I've used those. I actually... I was always afraid to open up my iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife had a iPhone 3GS, mm-hmm. and she dropped it and the screen shattered, and you know, it was out of warranty and everything. I thought, well, you know, I can send it somewhere to get repaired and it'll be, you know, X price, but like the screen for it was, you know, dirt cheap, $70. $50, something like that. And I'm like, I'm just going to order the screen. I'll use the guides. I'll do the whole thing. And as a matter of fact, she also was having issues with her speaker microphone. I had to disassemble that whole entire thing, but I just used the iFixit guide and it went perfectly. And I even threw in a new back case. So by the time I was done with that, I think I spent about, it must have been about $70 total to get all the parts. And I had a brand new iPhone 3GS. When it was all done, and it worked
so empowering,
perfectly.
You know, yeah, you put it away, and you're the boss.
But
know?
It was scary. It was scary as all get out when I'm sitting there at the kitchen table, and there's like a million screws, and like every part is just like splayed out.
Yeah,
you're like, what am I doing? There's no way this is going to work when I get it back together.
All right, so
but somehow it works.
Do.
Yeah,
I would do it, Ken. All just right. Go for it.
All right.
I'm like the last person in the world to ask about upgrading or adding stuff to your computer. It's
please.
I'm the world's biggest enabler.
Yeah. And you know what? I was just checking. Another great tool to use when you're kind of doing these upgrade stuff is, you guys know about Mac Tracker?
Yeah.
So
Mac Tracker is this little app that gives you all the specs and details on every product Apple ever made. Intricate details. And I was looking up your model, and actually according to them, they say Apple is only saying it's 8, but it'll actually do 16. So
Apple says 8. Why did I get 12? Maybe I just made that up.
I don't know. This is just what this says. This is just one source. I have no idea.
All right,
but regardless, I would go for 16.
The other important thing
that might only be, that might be why I only have 8 in mine, but you know, Crucial sells a 16 gig kit, and it sounds like OWC does. So
yeah,
these guys usually won't sell you the kit if it's not going to work, because they don't want a bunch of returns. So
I did. I upgraded my iMac from 4 to 16 last year because I was doing all these screencasts. And when you start processing the video, and then I'd put it into Final Cut. So I do a lot. I have a lot of production stuff I do. And when I upgraded the RAM, it was remarkable how much faster the computer ran.
Yeah. Yeah. It is the best upgrade you can do for your system. That's why I'm so bummed kind of about all the new ones and not being able to upgrade that stuff.
Where it's soldered
easily.
On.
Gotta, yeah.
Like, the new MacBook Air, just get the biggest memory you can afford.
Yeah, you want to get it with as much RAM as you can afford because you don't want to be regretting it 2-3 years later when you're having this issue. So save your pennies, folks, I guess is the lesson there. Because, I mean, literally, I'm looking at new machines. I've been speccing out new machines just for the... because I'm sick and I think that's kind of fun.
right.
And every time I try and go, okay, what's the machine I can build for the, you know, the best price that I think I can get that I can live with. And inevitably by the time I like take the, whatever the base model is and sort of, no, I want a little more RAM than that. And I need a bigger hard drive. Cause you know, I want the internal storage. And it's like, all right, I should have just bought the top of the line 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro.
That was Leo actually did that one time when I was on MacBreak Weekly. We were talking about I can't remember. We were talking about how to get a computer on the cheap. He's like, "Well, the thing to do would be to get the Mac Mini, and then you of course you'd want to add this." And so he's going through the whole thing right there. And by the time he was done, he could have gotten an iMac.
Yeah, like a $7,000 mini.
Exactly. It was crazy how much his mini was going to cost. I mean, had he actually been in the market, if he was actually planning on buying it, yeah, I didn't know you could get a mini to cost as much as he made it cost in about 30 seconds. Like, well, you want to add that, and you want to add this, and of course you want this. And I'm like, I thought the whole point of a mini was you don't have to. But yeah, somehow he made it work.
I do the same thing all the time. And,
while we're talking, I just got a 11-inch MacBook Air up to $2,800.
Yeah,
nicely done.
Exactly. The question came up from a listener just today, and you know, so the general advice is get as much machine as you can afford. I mean, that's been my thing since the very beginning. It's like you have to decide what your budget is, and what your not the bottom. Budget. You need to decide what your top budget is, and then that's the machine that you buy. You spend every penny you think you can afford to spend, and it's going to keep you happier much longer. I've known too many people who have sort of, you know, went, I could do without that, and I could do without that. And I've done it with my iPad Mini is a classic example. I went with the 16 gigabyte, and I'm now constantly having to manage, you know, what's on there. As a matter of fact, it was just full today. I was trying to do something, and it's like, you're out of space. I'm like, I got to take the one movie off that I have on there. You know, it's like I constrained it down to one movie. It's like, I can't have that because that's HD. Well, now I have to either re-rip that or reconvert it, or, you know, so just get the most. I should have got the 32
or 64. In particular, get as much memory as, you know, get max the memory.
Yes. If you don't max anything else, spend your money on RAM. And with Apple's new machines, you're going to have to start buying it from them because they're not letting you upgrade it.
And in my opinion, getting a lot more memory will extend the life of the device. You may get another year out of it. Whereas getting the faster processor, unless you're doing something really high end, I don't see that much bang for that buck.
Oh, that buck is not. Yeah, that's another thing we should mention to folks. I'm the same way. You know, if you think 0.2 gigahertz on a Core i5 is going to make that big of a difference, you're talking 5-10% increase in a few places. Go look at the benchmarks. One of my favorite places is you guys know about Bare Feets.
Yeah.
BareFeats.
No. Yeah. But my answer is going to be no on all this stuff. I mean, seriously, my laptop before this one was a MacBook. What was it? G4. It was a 12-inch. PowerBook G4, excuse me. So, I mean, it'll be a while.
Yeah.
I don't track this stuff all the time because...
I thought you were using like a MacBook 512 Plus.
not quite like that. But, I mean, you know, just... I mean, it's... Yeah. So, I mean, you're in one of these tracking sites and I won't have use for those until this one's got a bunch of duct tape wrapped around it and, you know...
No, Bare Feets is a great place to go see, you know, sort of real world. They do a lot of just straight up benchmarks, but they also do real world testing, you know, in real apps about like, here's the increase you're going to get for your, you know, 0.2 gigahertz. So I always say, you know, don't spend your $200-$300 on that. Spend your $200-$300 on RAM if you're having to decide, and then you're going to be much better. You're going to be much better off. So by the same token, you know, if you're the type of person who needs a machine, and I'm the same way, I want my Mac to last 4 or 5 years before I'm, you know, spending another $3,000 or whatever it is on a new one. So I spend more every 3 to 5 years rather than having a new, you know, lower end one every 2 to 3 years, which some people do. So I guess that's another tact you could take. I guess you could just buy more frequently and spend less money, but I like getting more bang for my buck.
I think you're going to dig the RAM upgrade, Ken.
Yep. Very cool.
Groovy. All right.
Hey, it's me, Adam. We'll get back to the interview here in just a second, but I need to take a moment and quickly thank another one of our show sponsors, and that is GoToMeeting by Citrix. You know, it's summertime. You got great weather. Your kids are probably out of school. There's a lot of places you'd probably rather be than in your office, and many of us take time when we go off and take vacations, but, you know, despite all of our best efforts, you're not always able to completely get away from the work. There's things happening, stuff that you need to be involved with. Your business doesn't stop or necessarily shut down. But the good news is you can get out of the office and still stay connected to your coworkers and your clients by using GoToMeeting. You can share ideas, you can solve problems, you can get projects done even when you're not physically at the office. Just use GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's got a simple and powerful way to meet and collaborate online. You can see each other in full HD. It works really, really well. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it takes literally just a click to share your screen, to share documents, and work in real time from wherever you're at. You just turn on your web camera, and you can have an online meeting, an HD video conference call happening in seconds, seeing each other face-to-face. It's literally just like meeting in person. I mean, it feels like that when you're using it. And you can easily launch and join a meeting from wherever you are. You can use your smartphone, you can use your computer, you can even use your tablet. You can present from your iPad. It is a really powerful tool. I personally love GoToMeeting. I use it in my business because I have clients all over the world. I need to be able to do training. I need to be able to show them things. So the ability for me to quickly and easily just email a client a link, I can even send them a meeting invite, and it allows them to easily add that to their iCal calendar, to their Outlook calendar. So I know they're going to be there and at the meeting. It gives them simple instructions to get up and running. There's not a lot of complex setup. They can just click the link and away we go. And then if I need to share my screen, something like that, it's another just a simple click. It really is a powerful tool for running your business and does let you work from anywhere. I've worked from coffee shops. I've worked from just the oddest locations you could imagine. And as long as you've got an internet connection, you are good to go. So don't worry about your summer vacation. You can take that. You know, if something comes up at the office, it's just a GoToMeeting away. And I really want you to check it out. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just use this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MACCAST. Remember, visit GoToMeeting.com, and then use the promo code MACCAST to try it free for 30 days. And a big thank you to Citrix and GoToMeeting for their support of the MACCAST. So now let's jump back into the interview. Here's myself, Dave Sparks, and Ken Ray. All right. Do we want to talk a little bit about Apple's new marketing? Because I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, I think it's been a while since this sort of ad campaign and direction kind of got to me. And when they opened Macworld, and I think they should use, or WWDC, excuse me, I think they should have used that opening video as their ad. I almost like the opening video that they did more than the ad campaign that they're running now.
The animation?
Yeah, just that simple little animation.
Yeah, it's so good. There's nothing simple about it, though, I'd say. It's so impressive.
But I just feel like this is the right kind of time and the sort of the right messaging for Apple to be, you know, putting out there. And I commented on an earlier show that I think this WWDC is the first look for us sort of at a new Apple.
Yeah, and this campaign is the spiritual successor to Think Different, in my mind.
Yes.
You know, if you look at Think Different, It came out when Steve came back. The company was in dire straits. And in fact, in the Steve Jobs biography, there's a line where he explains that they made that ad for the brand, but they also made it for the employees. I mean, the Think Different ad was made to sell people inside Apple as much as it was to sell people outside of Apple. And when you think about the way they've been beat up the last year or so, I guess last 6 months, I think this is kind of the same thing. Not as extreme, obviously, but it touches the same chords.
I wonder if the general consumer is going to glom to that. I mean, and I don't know that we'll ever know for certain, but I do love the messaging. I mean, the kind of messages you're getting right now from, you know, you're getting Samsung making fun of Apple. You're getting Microsoft making fun of Samsung and Apple.
Yeah.
And you're getting Apple showing people how they can live their lives with their stuff. And that's a really neat thing. I know we're not talking right this second about there's such a disconnect between Apple stock price right now and real world experience.
We can bring that in. I mean, because I wanted to hit on Apple stock price mostly because I don't follow it and I don't generally keep up with what analysts are talking about. But I did catch this week that I guess the stock price dipped below 400. I don't know where it's at right now. I'm assuming it's not still below 400. I think it was just a dip. And I would have thought after WWDC and all the announcements that things would have stabilized. So I was actually shocked that it was like, we're still playing this game, right?
Well, I mean, there's idiot stuff as far as what's going on Wall Street, and a couple of analysts are saying dumb things right now. Jefferies and Company analyst Peter Misick, chief among them, as far as I'm concerned. But what I was actually going to say is, with the whole showing them living their lives thing, there have actually been two analysts now. Brian Marshall, I believe, was one, and I cannot remember who the other one was. Oh, and I wish I could. Might have been Steve Milunovich from UBS. I'm not 100% certain on that, though. But these two analysts, basically, one of them... No, they both. Wait, one of them tried to do it and the other one did it. One of them went himself to a Best Buy to get a Samsung Galaxy S4 because he liked the bigger screen. And he found when he got there that he couldn't do it because there was too much stuff that wasn't going to go over. There was too much stuff that wasn't going to follow. There were too many apps that he wasn't going to be able to have. And so he then went back to his office and wrote a note to investors saying, yeah, the lock-in is real. So maybe don't worry so much about the competition because the lock-in is real. People who are there now are not going to be chasing a bigger screen across to another carrier or another manufacturer. But then this other guy actually went and did it anyway. He was, and this was not like a personal, like, I want a bigger screen, but this was, okay, is it really that much of a pain? And it turns out he decided it was. For the average consumer, it would cost the minimum cost, and this is like after the phone and after, you know, changing whatever and whatever, was like $80. I think, to replicate what you had on one device on another. And you were losing, I believe he said, 13% of stuff. Like there's, you're gonna have to be fine with more than 10% of what you've got on your iPhone not being able to be on the next phone, be that, you know, a certain app or some content that's not available in other ways, unless you're going about it, you know, in a nefarious way. And then it's going to cost you $80 to not have the full experience to boot. And it's not going to figure in, you know, as far as, you know, the synchronization with iTunes or with Apple TV. And, you know, this guy's sort of a dyed-in-the-wool user. So that's an actual thing to him. Right. So you're starting to get people, even on the business side, understand that it's not just about the screen size or it's not just about the speed, which a consumer advocacy group out of the UK ran a study this week. And what they found out was of the top seven smartphones out there, the iPhone 5 is the slowest.
I was curious about that. Slowest at what?
They benchmarked it. Exactly what you were talking about a minute ago that you might want to do with your Mac, they're benchmarking phones as well. And the idiot piece that I read, I'm using idiot a lot, I apologize, from the Telegraph said that, you know, or maybe it was somebody from Which who said the HTC One is the second speediest. And that's going to be a really popular phone with people who want to use Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, and Angry Birds all at the same time. You can't! You can't play Angry Birds and Gmail at the same time. You can't. So, I mean, it's a dumb metric to put out there. And then, of course, the Telegraph ran their piece, not by saying the Samsung Galaxy S4 is the fastest phone. They ran their piece saying iPhone 5, slowest phone. I mean, and so...
You mean on Android, can't I do a four-way split screen and have Angry Birds, you know, that are like 1 millimeter high?
Maybe. If you go for that 9-inch phone that Samsung's going to bring out next week, I don't know.
Somebody just did say, Huawei or whatever it is, I guess it's going to have a 7-inch phone.
Huawei, really?
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yes.
That's awesome. There was a fantastic study. I don't know if you heard yesterday's or Tuesday's edition of macOS Can. There was a study done by Harvard Business School. Did you hear about this?
No.
I sound like Jay Leno now. So they had people. They used an iPod Touch, an iPad, a MacBook Pro, and an iMac, and they had them just do general stuff. Okay. And then what they said was, okay, so the guy running the test said, okay, I'm going to go, I'll be back in 5 minutes. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, come to the front desk and get me. And then he stayed out until they came for as long as 10 minutes. And what they found was that the people who would use the iMac would come get them more quickly than the people who would use the iPhone. And it ran that way through the sizes, or excuse me, the iPod Touch. And it ran that way through the sizes. And what they're figuring is how you have to hold yourself to do most of your stuff on the iPhone, you're sort of making yourself more diminutive. You're contracting your body. You're sort of making yourself smaller. Whereas when you're using iMac, you're using bigger gestures. Your posture is more is broader, and so you're a more assertive person for using that. All of which is to say, maybe the 7-inch phone is not a bad idea. Except for
especially
the part
if
where
you have a really
pocket.
Especially if you have a really, really big face.
there is that, too. There is that, too. I think it went like 5 different places there. I apologize, but
no,
go ahead,
no apologies on this show.
I don't know. It seems funny to me, and us nerds get really upset when people start talking about speeds of devices and capacities and all these things. And I think Apple people are sensitive to it because for so many years, that was the hammer that was used to be the objective proof that Apple was worse. You know, nobody gave any attention to the experience and how it worked, but it didn't matter. This is, 200 megahertz faster, so therefore it's better. And Apple has always avoided that stuff. And I'm not sure how effective those ads are to people that are not nerds. As to saying, well, this is faster than that phone. I mean, I think it's an experience thing. I deal with a lot of...
That.
Whoa.
What was that?
Lightsaber.
My kids gave me a Father's Day present. And I was sitting here fiddling with it while I was talking.
That was actually what bothered me about the Telegraph piece, to your point. I mean, it was I don't know what it would be in a newspaper if it was printed, but it was a full page of, a web story. Talking about, which is the fastest phone, like it matters. Yeah, I mean, because what the piece did not take into account were things like I was talking about that those financial analysts had written about things like iTunes integration or working with your Apple television. I think what I actually said, or Apple TV, excuse me. I think what I actually said was there's absolutely no attention paid in this piece to, how a phone fits into your digital life, assuming you have any kind of digital life. Now, for a lot of people, it's just going to be, well, maybe this is their first phone, so they don't have to worry about the digital life thing. But if this is their first smartphone, they're also not worried about speed. If they've not gotten the smartphone to this point, they're not going to jump in and go, well, in that case, I want the fastest and the most, which has the most pixel density or the highest pixel density, anything like that. And they're just going to look at it and go, do I understand it? Is it going to do what I want it to do? Right. Or is that the free one? Oh, okay, the free one? Yes. Give me two.
Well, which is the brilliance of Apple's campaign, right? Because their campaign in many ways is it's about saying, here's why we make our products. But it's also, if you look at what they're showing, they're showing how it's impacting someone's life, how this is going to be a part of your life and be a part of what you do and what you use. And there's never a focus on specs or this. But you look at those other ads like you were reciting, Ken, and I think it's funny. I had not thought about the fact that, you know, Samsung's doing the whole anti-Apple thing and Microsoft's doing the anti-Apple Samsung thing, you know, where but they're throwing in, oh, you know, this one has a big screen and that one has a, you know, they get their little spec things in there or their feature things in there, or these two can bump together, right, to transfer a file. It's just like, you know, it seems like Apple's, and I've said this many times, Apple's just playing this different game, and it cracks me up or just makes me shake my head constantly. Like, Apple doesn't care about any of this stuff. And I guess I'm glad that they're finally, it seems like in the ads and what was said at WWDC is like they're finally coming out and just publicly saying, look, we don't give a rat's what anybody else is doing. You know, we don't care. This is not our focus. This is not what drives us every day. This is not, you know, like, yeah, could we make a phone that you don't have to touch the screen to use it? Sure. But that doesn't change our customers' lives. It doesn't improve anything. Well, I guess if you eat a lot of barbecue, apparently from the ads that I've seen for Samsung, that's really helpful. And I love barbecue, so but it's
maybe
never really
switch.
It's never become a day-to-day problem with my iPhone, to be honest. So I think that's what Apple responds to. It's like, we're solving a problem that not a lot of people have, and even the people that might have this problem probably don't care all that much.
I've had a lot of issues lately with decision fatigue, and I've been thinking about it, where all of the decisions you make every day and how if you make 1,000 decisions, you're eventually not going to be able to make good decisions. And I think Apple really takes the position that, look, we're going to think through how to make a great device. And as a consumer, you just come and you buy the one with our logo on it and you'll be fine. And that's, they really believe that. It sounds arrogant. I know as I say the words, it sounds arrogant. But
no, isn't that something that Tim Cook said at D11?
Oh, yeah.
That he felt like that Apple customers pay them to make a lot of the decisions that you're talking about?
He said exactly that, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, not word for word, but I mean, that was the gist.
And so when the competitors are going to come out with 12 products in the same category as one Apple product, I don't think they care. And I guess that's the point of one of the points of these ads.
The only time that starts to bite you is right now. And when I say right now, I mean this time of year. So I mentioned Peter Misek, and I probably called him an idiot a few minutes ago. He is he yesterday lowered Apple's target, or his target price on Apple shares, from $420 to $405. He had a hold rating on them. He still has a hold rating on them. And the reason he has a hold rating on them is because he's not sure, he's not liking the way iPhone builds are looking right now. Right now, of course, being about 3 months before we're expecting the next iPhone.
Right.
And it seems to me like we had this same thing last year, about this time last year, where all of a sudden people are like, wait a minute, they're not making as many iPhone 4Ss anymore. Something must be wrong with iPhone 4S sales. Or it could be that they're trying to clear out inventory ahead of the iPhone 5. And so now it's possible that they're, you know, changing the way they build, getting ready for the iPhone 5S. The iPhone 5 then becomes the $99 phone. The iPhone 4S then becomes the free phone. And, you know, we're sort of at the same place. Well, you know, a year from now, we'll be saying the same thing. Oh, is nobody buying the iPhone 5S anymore? It kind of hurts in that respect, but I mean, it only hurts more because then people are, you know, dumb. People who actually affect the way money moves are dumb, and they say, oh, well, we're not seeing evidence of a new iPhone, but we're seeing slowdown on this iPhone. So, you know, the sky is falling.
Well, yeah.
Well, you know, my day job, I'm essentially a country doctor lawyer out here in Orange County. I'm not a big, you know, high, big firm Wall Street guy.
I'll give you two chickens to sue somebody.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's my life. But the the extent I've had experience with Wall Street stuff, every time there is no line between rationality and decision making. It seems completely random to me, and that's to the extent I've been on the inside of anything. So I've given up trying to figure out stock prices long ago. When Apple was super high, I didn't brag about it or make a big deal about it. And when they drop, I think there's a whole lot of motivations there that have nothing to do with the health of the company.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I mean, there was Fortune yesterday. Philip Elmer DeWitt said, yeah, because Samsung has been taking the same beating. I don't know. So if you guys don't pay attention to Apple stock, there's no way you're paying attention to Samsung. But Samsung last week lost $20 billion in value. They lost $20 billion in value. How did they lose $20 billion in value in 1 week? Because it turns out Samsung is not going to sell as many iPhones as financial analysts, not iPhones, excuse me, Galaxy phones, Galaxy S4s in particular, not going to sell quite as many as financial analysts had thought they were going to sell. So again, it is not that Samsung did anything wrong. Right. In fact, to their credit, Samsung back in January said, listen, everybody, this year is going to be a tougher year than any of you think for smartphones because people are holding on to them longer and there's a lot more competition at the high end. Plus, a lot of the people who are going to buy high-end smartphones have already bought high-end smartphones. So maybe don't expect quite as much as you've been expecting.
Yep.
And everyone said, you're high. Come on, you're Samsung. The Galaxy S3 was insanely great. So Galaxy S4 is going to sell like this many million. And it turns out they overshot their estimates by about, I want to say it was 30%. And so now, at least this time, the analysts are saying, God, you know, we kind of went a little crazy. At least this time they are saying, we kind of went a little crazy. But it's still Samsung. I think what I said on macOS Con that time was, you know, so maybe they were drunk on Samsung's success. It was Samsung that's going to wake up with a hangover. Not unlike what happened to Apple as soon as the iPhone 5 came out. Everybody's like, holy cats, everybody is going to own an iPhone 5 next week. And it turns out they didn't sell quite that many.
They did not. I can see that. I can see that firsthand. I mean, and it's funny you bring up that point because I was just at an iOS developers meetup, right? And you expect like every developer's got an iPhone 5S or a 5, excuse me, 5. Those aren't out yet.
I know.
They didn't get them out to developers early or anything like that. Nobody freak out.
Everybody look under your chair.
Okay. yeah, but I was frankly surprised looking out of the room. A lot of those guys still have 4s and 4s's. You know, it's people aren't upgrading. You know, like here's a big news flash. Guess what? People don't upgrade their phones every 3 months when you bring out a new one.
Right, and so I mean that actually helps iOS and Apple not have the fragmentation problems that all of the different Android phones and certainly the Android operating systems are having. Right.
Yeah.
As well. Eh. Of course, I mean, that's also helped by the fact that you can't, you know, fork off your own version of iOS. I'm sorry, you were saying, Dave.
I kind of dread if Apple's going to come out with a bigger iPhone because, you know, I personally have made fun of phablets so much that I'll end up getting one and loving it and then have egg all over my face.
It's not happening this year. Don't worry, it's not this year. Next year, you'll have to worry about that.
That's good. Got a little more time.
All right, I want to talk about iTunes Radio.
Okay.
A little bit, And mainly because we now know it's a thing. It's like a real thing.
Right. Also known as iPandora.
iPandora. Exactly. And I love Pandora, and you know, I think Ken, we've talked about this a few times on these episodes, but you're the more catalog guy.
Yes.
I'm okay with the whole radio music discovery kind of angle.
Oh, I'm so glad we're getting into this. We just recorded a show with Chris Breen on Mac Power Users, and I'm so torn because, you know, Chris is a huge user of all these different subscription services. And I had a Spotify account for a month, and I really liked it. And I'm not sure Pandora is going to be enough for me, but I'm torn about whether I want to spend, what is, $10 a month.
Yeah. Well, and so I'll give you guys my take on it, and you can chime in on it. And I mentioned this kind of in passing on some Maccasts, but to me, the killer thing for iTunes Radio is all the angles that Apple is working here. You know, and this isn't all pro consumer. There's a little bit for the consumer, there's a little bit for Apple, and there's a little bit for the record labels, and that's why I like it so much. Is because, okay, you've got free and ad supported, so ad revenue for Apple and the record labels, free for the consumer who wants to get it. It works in iTunes, on your Apple TV, and on all of your iOS devices. So immediately, you've got an audience of millions of people. Everybody gets this built in for free. You don't have to download another app. You don't have to do anything other than click a button when you're in the music app and listen. So that's immediate discovery for all these people. It's also immediate new content that you don't have to do anything for. You don't have to pay anything for. I love the fact that me as an iTunes Match customer, I'm going to get it ad-free and I don't have to buy another thing. So I'm totally stoked and excited about that because I'd been toying with paying for Pandora at some point, and now I'm not going to do that. So maybe that's bad for Pandora. And I'm likely going to buy more music, I think, because I'm going to find things that might interest me on iTunes. And the fact that it ties into my iTunes account makes it really easy for me to make that purchase. And there's less barriers there. So really good for Apple, really good for the record labels, really good for the consumer. And I don't think Apple's particularly worried about all those people who want a catalog style service, because you have RDO, you have Spotify, which have great iOS apps. So I think they looked at it like, that's already covered. That's not a business necessarily. I think the one thing coming out of it is it clearly states where Apple's interests are, that they still are interested more in selling music, I think, than providing a catalog service. I don't know if that'll change in the future, but for now, they're clearly stating, look, you know, we're about selling tracks on iTunes, and this is to me, from Apple's perspective, is all about discovery. But from the consumer perspective, I think it's really powerful because it's going to be immediately available on all those devices that get upgraded to iOS 7. And we know that consumers upgrade on iOS at a much higher rate than on other platforms. And because of the sheer millions of users that Apple has, it's immediately accessible and available to a large audience. So I think it's going to be a cool win-win. And it's just I said this, it's a give me. And, you know, it's a give me for existing Apple customers. It's just something you have, whether you use it or not, is incidental. And I think because it's built in, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try it out and use it and really like it.
The thing I don't like about Pandora is I find it gets a lot of repeats. And maybe that's because I have the free one. But I'll be interested to see when this comes out how many repeats you get.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I expect that Apple might have the same problem, because I think that's more in the algorithm side of things. I do know it came out, like, I think they have it that you'll be able to tweak, though, sort of how it randomizes. Have you guys seen that? Yeah, so you can kind of say, okay, here's my station, and I want you to play more top hit stuff. I want you to play kind of a mix of stuff, or I want you to play more of obscure stuff related to this artist, you know, that more discovery mode. So it's kind of got three little modes that you can put it in.
Wow, that's surprising that Apple would do something like that.
I think I saw that written up somewhere.
That would be neat. I know one of the guys that I knew at CBS Radio a few years ago was working on a site that tried to do something like that, but it never did. It was actually a really neat thing. For some reason, it never got out of beta, never took off. It was available for everyone, but they really didn't push it at all. Mm-hmm. But it was neat because if you're like, you know, I'm in the mood for Queen today, so fine. You take Queen, and you'd actually take one of Queen's album covers and put it in the middle of this bullseye. And then it would say, oh, you like Queen, maybe you would like The Darkness. And so, you know, you would take The Darkness and go, okay, well, I kind of like them, but I don't want them to be like nearly as much as Queen. So then you put them sort of at the edge of the bullseye. It was a really neat idea. The problem was it didn't actually work that well. It just kept playing Queen. and never would, you know, put something else in. I will say, well, first of all, I'm not excited about iTunes Radio because I'm not excited about Pandora because I'm not excited about the radio because I am the catalog guy, as you say. If right. I want to hear Queen, I don't want it to go, oh, you like Queen? Maybe you like The Darkness. Well, maybe I do, but I want to hear Queen, you know?
Right, yeah,
so
yeah.
That's sort of the first thing. The other thing is I hope that their radio thing does, like Dave saying that he gets repetition on Pandora. iTunes Genius, for some reason, whenever I try to make a Genius playlist on iTunes, every song related to Hashpipe by Weezer, as far as my iTunes was concerned. And it didn't really seem to matter where I started. Usually about the middle, if I was doing a 50-track Genius playlist, usually at about somewhere between track 20 and 27, Hashpipe.
I've got Weezer in my Dave Rubeck list.
Do you actually, honestly?
No, I'm just...
Okay.
Talk about that, stupid. Forget stupid analysts. Genius was stupid.
It didn't work as... I mean, like I say, I like Hashpipe, so it was okay. But, you know, it really struck me as... It was hard for me to believe that every song that I had was actually tied to it. Sort of like my dad. My dad used to know how to get to any place from his house, but... If you were on like one side of town, it turns out the place that you were going was on the same side of town, but he didn't know how to get there. He would drive all the way to the other side of town where he grew up because he knew how to get there from his place. So it'd take an hour and a half to get like 15 minutes. Maybe Hashpipe by Weezer was sort of iTunes Genius's one frame of reference. Like, oh, if I can just get there, then I can get you to anything. We'll get back to your jazz combo.
So your dad just had to like reset his PRAM.
I guess. It sounds dirty. It's my dad you're talking about, dude. Stop it.
Yeah, I'm really torn because I like the idea of a catalog, and I just got to figure out if I'm willing to pay for it or not. The 1 month I was trying it, I found all this great stuff that I'd never heard before, so that's a real good argument for it. But then when you think, if you're going to spend $10 a month, that's $120 a year. I could buy a lot of music with $120. So,
you could buy 12 albums.
Yeah,
I mean,
if
you're talking about albums, I mean, you can buy 12 albums and then you're done, or you can, you know, pay $120 and have
everything.
120 tracks. So a lot of it has to do with how you buy music. So there's an interesting thing. I'm assuming us here are album guys. I have not switched over to the whole track thing. I mean,
no, I'm a track guy.
Are you a track guy? That's interesting.
I am also a track guy.
Huh. I'm an album. I still like buying albums.
But I mean, my music tastes are really strange, and the stuff I like a lot of time is really old, and I'll just get one or two tracks off an album. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm just a playlist junkie on Spotify. That's what it comes down to. And there are playlists that I'll make, and I won't get rid of them. I might not listen to them all the time, but you know, every now and then they're the right thing for me. And yeah. I mean, just one of my playlists would take care of that $120.
Yeah,
that Dave was talking about. And so, having constant access to it for one price, I'm a huge fan of that. I mean, I also do Netflix streaming for the same reason. Am I watching everything on Netflix? No. But there are some things I will go back and watch again and again and again. And then, you know, every now and then I'm like, I'm in the mood for a World War II documentary. Well, I'm not going to buy it.
For me, Netflix is an easier decision. I am a Netflix streaming subscriber as well, and I have no interest in buying almost any video. There's only a few movies that I would own. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. Whereas with the music, I really love music, and I'm thinking, well, I pay the money for one of these catalog services, and as soon as I stop paying the money, I don't have any of that music.
And that's true. But, you know, then you can go ahead and still buy the album.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Adam, you and I probably on this very show have talked about this many times. I'm a huge fan of the catalog thing.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you think, Rhapsody or Spotify?
Spotify, because I like the social part of it. I like the sharing part of it. There are people whose musical taste that I like and I trust, and I find some interesting things, and so I follow them on Spotify. And occasionally I'll dive into some of their playlists and come out with some interesting stuff. I was a Rhapsody fan. Before Spotify came to the States, I had a Rhapsody account. And then I tried the free Spotify for a few weeks, and sadly that was it for Rhapsody.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to ask, how is the pricing on for multiple users with Spotify? Do you have to pay per...
For multiple users, I honestly couldn't tell you. I can tell you for multiple devices, the pricing on Spotify is better than it is on Rhapsody. Rhapsody for $9.99 a month, and this was over a year ago now when I switched to Spotify, so these prices might not be... This was actually the deciding factor for Spotify for me. I think it's... You either get two or three mobile devices plus the computer use. Rhapsody, you only got one mobile device. Now, you could switch that mobile device, but you actually had to then log in to your Rhapsody account on a computer, deactivate whatever it was on. So, like, I listen to Spotify on both my iPad and my iPhone, depending on where I am. And trying to do that with Rhapsody, it was like, okay, so go onto your computer and then, you know, deactivate your iPad and then deactivate it on your iPad, activate it on your iPhone, and then the next time you want to switch, you have to do that again. And that was just, I think it was like $15 to have three mobile devices at that point, and that was just stupid. So I guess then, to answer your question about, no, that wouldn't do it for mobile users, though, because Spotify does know if you're on two places, if you're playing at two places.
Yeah, I just, the reason I'm bringing it up, because I noticed that RDO, I guess, changed or updated their plans. They have a family plan, so for someone like you, Dave, I don't know if your family would be listening, but I guess, yeah, you know, you have limited streams, too, when you start, or limited, I guess, streams it would be, or downloads, or I don't know how it works, but...
Yeah, that's one of my concerns, because I was looking at, when I tested Spotify, my daughter got into it too, but as soon as we couldn't listen at the same time to, you know, our different music.
Right.
And I believe Rhapsody has some type of plan. Now I'm kind of just talking.
Well, I'm even looking at it, but like, so I had not dug into these and then RDO. So have either of you tried RDO? I mean, I hear people talk about that all the time, but I have no sense of how it compares to Spotify or any of the others.
No, I haven't tried it.
Yeah. But so their family plan, it's like $18 a month if you want two people.
Wow.
$23 a month if you want three people. $27 a month if you want four, and $32 if you want five. So it's sort of like this catalog model goes up really fast if you want multiple people, you know, to have access.
And Rhapsody makes it really hard to figure out how much they charge on their website.
So I can see how it works, you know, fine for one person, but I don't know if I want to pay $30 a month or even $25 a month so my whole family can listen.
Well, it depends. How many albums are you buying for them, or how many tracks? I mean, how much are you spending on music normally?
Me, not a lot, because I'm the only one who really buys music and listens to it in my family currently, but, you know.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's worth it. I mean, the one drag is, and I went ahead, I'm a They Might Be Giants fan, and I will be forever, and I buy their albums because I want to support them.
Right.
Their album was available on Spotify the same day it came out. I went ahead and bought it because I've always bought They Might Be Giants albums, and I always will, because, I mean, I remember seeing them when there was just the two of them, and now it's a band, and, you know, they got kids to feed and whatever. But, I mean, they stay current. Spotify just added Pink Floyd, which kind of blew my mind, because I never figured that would happen. They still don't have Led Zeppelin or AC/DC, and, of course, nobody has Def Leppard, but... I mean, they're current. You can try new stuff, and then, you know, if you're concerned about being in a plane, I mean, they do have offline listening, but right. You can also go ahead and still support if you want to. I mean, if that's what it's about for you. But I don't know. It's Bill Palmer and I used to have that argument too. He's the same way that you were saying, Dave. He wants to own the music, but it's, you know, you practically do.
I'll tell you, I have so much angst over it because I'm actually really interested in it, and I just haven't figured it out. And then I think, wait a second, you know, $10 a month, Dave. $10 a month, you know? Really. Get over it.
It sounds like, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you should just try it. I mean, for me, it just doesn't interest me, because I don't think I'm into music maybe as much as you guys are. I like to listen, but I'm totally a shuffle guy, which is why the iTunes radio model works so well for me, because I'm perfectly happy to, you know, put in something that I know I like and then just let it find stuff for me to play. Like, I don't really care all that much. And I very often why I love Pandora so much is I do find stuff that I didn't know about. I've found several bands that way, and I've bought a few albums from that. So that totally works for me. So maybe because I'm an album guy and I'm a shuffle play guy, you know, like even my own music list, I don't make playlists. I don't do anything. I just like, okay, hit shuffle. And if something comes up I don't feel like listening to, I'll just skip it. So...
Yeah. Well, when I had Spotify, I found an old Miles Davis album that I had forgot about. I used to love, and I was like, oh, this is great. But yeah, so I need to research it more. But I'm going to look into it. The problem I have is, if I do it, is I want to include my daughter, who's a 16-year-old and, of course, loves music. And I'd like to do it in a way that she could have her own stuff, and right. We could both be using it at the same time. And I've got to look into these different services to see which one can do that economically.
Cool. Well, do we want to talk about this WAS thing, or do we want to just go on to kind of some of the stuff we're jazzed about right now, Mac and Apple related? What do you guys think? I think we got time for one more thing.
It's your call. I thought what you had. Yeah, do the WAS thing.
Yeah, let's talk about the WAS thing a little bit. So I was reading, you know, finally the Jobs movie is coming out. And initially, I guess Woz had been pretty critical about the first trailer that was shown. Actually, the new trailer. Did you guys catch the new trailer that they released?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm much more interested in the movie after this trailer. And I'm hoping it's not just, you know, something that they cut together the best scenes. And but it definitely looks a lot better. But he had also apparently, Woz had also apparently been critical of the screenplay, which I guess he got an early copy of. And so he was being interviewed. I saw this piece over on Cult of Mac. I think he was being interviewed by Gizmodo, not one of my favorite places, but well, there it is. And he had commented that his new concern is not that he necessarily hates the movie or, you know, isn't going to go see the movie. He was saying how he's open to creative license and those sorts of things, as long as, you know, they get the most of the, you know, gist of the facts right. I don't think he's looking for, you know, documentary style accuracy, but he said his concern was that they were going to portray Steve Jobs as a saint who sort of ignored, you know, and who was ignored and then suddenly, you know, became this great savior of Apple, when you know, the reality of the history was, in essence, that when Steve, in those early days, when Steve was at Apple building the Macintosh, most of his projects that he was championing and working on were failures when they launched. So things like the Apple III, the Lisa, the Macintosh. And that's not detracting. I don't think the gist here was detracting from the technology that was in there. But, I mean, if you look at the revenues and how they performed at the time, they were really sort of these failed products compared to something like the Apple II, which is, you know, was Jobs was basically killing while he was there. And the Macintosh really took off in the years after Jobs left. And I think it's easy to kind of forget that history. I know I had kind of forgotten about it, but I'm reading through these things and going, yeah, that's right. And it was later when Jobs came back, he was sort of a different person after having been fired from Apple and gone to the next. It was after that when he did the iMac and the iPod and iTunes and Apple Retail Store and the iPhone and the iPad. So I think there was a lot of growing up in between, and it'd be interesting. So I think the concern is, how's this movie going to come out? Because it's looking at those earlier years, and is it going to really show Jobs in this sort of shifted light? And I think Woz has some points. Oftentimes when I'm reading stuff from, you know, that Woz is saying, I'm kind of questioning it. I also know, you know, from him personally, hearing him in some different places, that very often, you know, surprise, surprise, the press takes stuff that he says and misconstrues it as well. So, you know, take that for what it is. But I think in this case, I was very interested by these statements. The article was spun as, you know, he doesn't hate the Jobs movie. But really, when I dug into the piece, I thought what was more interesting was this concept of, you know, our perspective of history, and particularly the history of Apple among Apple fans as it relates to Steve Jobs. So I don't know what you guys think on that, but I found it interesting.
Well, I mean, Steve Jobs is dead. I mean, that's sort of where you start, right? I mean, generally right. speaking, we live in a culture that it's not a big fan of going, oh, remember that other time that the dead guy screwed up? I mean, yeah. If somebody dies and they're automatically, not automatically lionized, but oftentimes automatically lionized. So, I mean, there's a pretty good chance that that's going to detract from the truth. Second, we're talking about a movie that wants to make money. Generally speaking, you don't get... I doubt that the life of the gangsters in Goodfellas, despite the fact that it was based on a true story, was nearly as romantic as right. they made it seem, and it wasn't the most romantic, you know, gangster movie that you'd ever seen.
One of my favorites, though.
Oh yeah, it's a fantastic film. I think it's great. But I mean, I don't think there's anybody there. Nobody even looks as good as Paul Sorvino, who was not the best looking man in that movie, right? I mean, there's going to be a certain amount of Hollywood,
right?
When you're saying all that, though, the one thing that I'm kind of thinking about is, okay, so Steve Jobs was trying to kill the Apple II and, you know, push things like Lisa and Mac. Well, he was obviously crazy to think that Lisa was going to take off at the price that they were charging for it. But, I mean, he kind of kills things before they're done, right?
Right.
I mean, he did. I mean, the iPod Mini was the best-selling iPod, and so they killed it and made the Nano. And people really, really like their you know, DVD drives and their computers, but they're starting to go away from their computers, at least with, you know, with the Air. I mean, there's always there always was anyway with Jobs, an eye toward the future and what it could be. And so it's kind of not surprising that he wanted to kill the Apple II, even though it was their big moneymaker. It would have been bad. And yes, it probably would have hurt Apple a lot earlier than Apple ended up hurting as much as it did. There's just something kind of interesting about it when you say it that way.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, a lot of people forget that the Macintosh wasn't a success from day one. And I have to be reminded of that.
Because I remember the first time I used a Mac, it was like, and it was 84, 85. I mean, it was early. So 85, 86, I guess, was when I would have used one. But I mean, that's crazy to think that it was not an immediate success, because I'm like, it was like the top of your head came off.
It had so much hype, and you would have thought. But yeah, I'd have to go back and dig into all the specific reasons. But yeah, the technology, and again, not saying that the technology behind the Lisa, and I think that might be the thing that Woz is sort of detracting from in some of these statements, is that yes, maybe these things weren't critical successes in terms of revenue and sales and things like that, but where the successes are is in the technology and the pushing things forward stuff. And that's the broader vision of Apple. And I think that's more, in my mind, what makes Apple great. So, you know, if you want to take the Hollywood spin on that, that's what I would use. So I think he's going to be ultimately disappointed by this film, because I think it's going to do exactly what he's fearing. But I think for good reason, you know. It's sort of like,
I mean, Woz is an engineer, and I think he's very literal.
Yeah.
And I think there's always been kind of a thing where, you know, Steve Jobs kind of had it in for the Apple II, and he was trying to be forward thinking. And I think even back in the day, there was strife between those two over that issue. I think it's pretty well documented. But I think this whole idea of this mythology around Steve Jobs is interesting too, because this is just one more piece of that, where you've got the story of the guy who got fired for saying typography is not relevant. I mean, that's in the preview.
The trailer, yeah.
But I think the big takeaway I had, because I've learned a lot more about Steve Jobs in the last few years than I knew before with the biography and the various stories coming out after he died, is I'm amazed by how often he was wrong. Yeah. I mean, this guy made a lot of mistakes. And a lot of them were really, you know, kind of dumb mistakes. And he just got his head down and was pointing in one direction and refused to budge. And that served him well. And I'm not saying that I'm smarter than he is, because I don't think I am. But he did make a lot of mistakes. And I think it would be interesting if they exposed some of that in the movie. So,
yeah, I think that is a little bit what Woz is responding to, too, is like, you know, you can go a number of directions, and you can rise this guy up to sainthood and say he never did any wrong. And that's not necessarily the correct picture to be portraying. But at the same time, I can see, you know, what we're talking about here. You know, this is a film that has to sell tickets as well. And that's typically what happens. So it'll be interesting to see how people respond to it. But I did like the reminder that, exactly like you're saying, Dave, you know, this Steve made a lot of mistakes, and everybody's human, and we all make mistakes. And I think it's easy to kind of forget that when you fall into this mythology that is fun, and we like to remember the good stuff and not necessarily all these little bad things. So it'll be interesting, but I just wanted to bring it up because I thought he made some very relevant points there, and certainly some things that I had totally forgotten about, like. Didn't succeed, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It didn't really do all that well. Well, cool.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm sorry. It'll be interesting to see which one, because when they talk about the Ashton Kutcher movie, they always mention the fact that Aaron Sorkin is still writing the screenplay for his Apple movie. It wouldn't surprise me, actually, if the Make It More Quickly one is the one that's more factual. Because Aaron Sorkin is such an artist as far as conversation. I don't think that he will let, you know, the history of Apple get in the way of a great monologue.
Yeah.
And his will probably be a much better movie.
Right.
But it'll be weird if the Ashton Kutcher.
It'll be heavier on the mythology, maybe, though.
Movie is going to be, which?
The Sorkin one.
Well, I mean, you know, you can sort of look at him as an artist. I mean, he's got a lot of demons that he wrestles with no matter what he's making. I mean, a show about The West Wing or a show about, you know, something that's like SportsCenter or a show that's about something that's like Saturday Night Live. Somehow, some of the same monsters show up in all of those movies. So, I mean, it's quite possible.
Let's get him.
And some of the same lines even show up in all of those and in the Facebook movie, too.
Can we get Sorkin making TV shows for iTunes? That's what I would like.
No, he's making it for HBO. He's doing The Newsroom for HBO.
No. I want him to bring back all those shows you just mentioned. Bring them all back.
Yeah, they're all fantastic. Well, but Sports he's working Night, on one right now. So
West Wing. What was the
Studio
SNL one?
Studio 66. Okay. It was all right. It wasn't as good as the other two, but it was
no,
all right.
But it was still good. Better than a lot of crap that's on TV right now.
I read somewhere that his Jobs movie was going to be three of Steve's keynotes.
Yeah,
it was
well,
it's going to be like the time surrounding it.
Backstage before the three keynotes is what I think somebody had said at one point. Hmm. But who knows? I mean, he's not even done with the screenplay yet. Who knows when that's going to come out?
But his is supposed to be inspired by the biography, right? I mean, it's supposed to be. Did I read that he was working with
Sony, I think.
Yeah, which licensed the Isaacson book.
Okay. Right.
Although so much of the stuff in the Isaacson book was already kind of known.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing both, and it's good that the Ashton Kutcher one's finally coming out. I don't know. Do we know why it was delayed? I have not heard why.
No.
There was a lot of rumor and speculation about why, but they've never said why. And the latest I heard was just simply so they could have more time to market it, but they weren't really doing any marketing, so that didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Well, cool. All right. I think we're done. I want to thank you guys for coming and chatting with us, and we are going to try and coax Victor back for our next one. So those of you who have been waiting for Victor to come back on and do another MacCast, hopefully we'll be able to get him back for a little bit. Thanks, guys. So real quickly, you want to tell everybody where they can go check out what you do on a weekly basis and where they can follow you guys and check out what you're doing, Ken?
Well, I guess the best thing is just macosken.com. I do a daily Apple news related to Apple news podcast called macosken, Monday through Friday, daily, that is, wherever fine podcasts are served.
Mostly iTunes. And Dave?
I'm over at macsparky.com, where I have books and podcasts and many other things.
Very, very cool. Check them all out. The books are quite excellent, too. The Max Sparky Field Guides. How many do you have now up there? You got three?
Yeah, I got Markdown, 60 Mountain Lion Tips, which is really 60 Mac Tips, so it's still relevant, and Paperless.
Awesome. So check all that stuff out, as well as the podcasts. Thank you both. Hey, there you go. So Dave Sparks and Ken Ray, some of our thoughts on the latest Apple and Mac news, what's happening in the community. If you have any feedback for any of us, if you have a comment on anything that we talked about, please shoot an email, send an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. And one thing I want to add before you send in your feedback, because some of you might be chomping at the bit on this one, I want to add some clarification to some of the statements I made about the success, the critical success of the Macintosh as it related to the Steve Wozniak stuff we were talking about. I am really bad about mixing up sales and revenue. And I think a couple times I might have mentioned that the sales of the Macintosh weren't strong. The sales were actually pretty strong. I think they sold something like 70,000 in the first 100 days and 250,000 early in 1984. So in terms of unit numbers, the Macintosh did do very well. It was the revenue numbers that weren't coming in. It wasn't a money maker for Apple in terms of its success. So you have to have that perspective on what makes a successful system. And my bottom line these days is, you know, Apple makes products that make money, and the Macintosh was not a money maker at the time, even though they sold a number of units. It was the Apple II that carried the company for a very long time before the Macintosh truly became a financial success. So I just wanted to clarify that in case some of you are ready to send me some angry emails. I know that might have been confusing. I noticed that as I was doing the editing on this show. Now, a couple little quick house cleaning things for you. First, I want to say a big congratulations to Mary from New York. She was the winner of our transporter from Connected Data in our transporter giveaway. So they're shipping that off to her. And Mary, I hope you enjoy your new transporter. I personally love mine, and I'm looking forward to the new 2.0 software update that's going to make it even cooler. Also, I gave away my British Tech Network Bash ticket. If you're not familiar, the British Tech Network is a great technology geek podcast network over there in Britain. The URL is britishtechnetwork.com. They have like a gazillion shows covering everything from Mac to photo to iOS to web, comics, you name it. They probably have a show. They also live stream. I'm on the Mac show once a month on usually the first Friday of the month, and you can catch that. It's pretty early in the morning, 7:30 Pacific time, and don't remember how that translates over into the UK time, but you can check out all the information on the website. And every year they do this big, what they call bash, basically a dinner or lunch, I guess. I don't know what I'm talking about. They have a big party. Let's just put it that way. And everything's covered, your food, your drinks, and it's all for just one fee. And I had bought a ticket to support them, and we gave that away. So congratulations to the winner of that ticket. And I think they still have tickets available. It's happening on Saturday, July 6th. So you can go to the website and get information. And if you have kids and they're under 12, I think they're free. But they're doing like a pig roast, and you get, again, all your food and drinks. And you can just hang out with a bunch of really cool people. Say hi to Ewan when you're over there. Ewan Rankin runs the Mac show. He's the host, and great guy. And just a bunch of great people over there. So if you're in that area at all, I would encourage you to go check that out. But that is going to do it for our show for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, as well as Text Expander Touch. You can get more information and details on all of their software on their website over at smilesoftware.com. GoToMeeting by Citrix. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter my promo code MacCast. Also, check out Gazelle. It's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, MacBook is worth. Hey, maybe you want one of those new MacBook Airs. Get some cash for your old stuff over at Gazelle.com. And Squarespace, it's a website publishing platform. They make it really easy to create a professional web page, blog, online store, or gallery, all on a single platform. They have a beautiful, intuitive interface, really easy to use, and you can try it free, no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com to sign up. Use my offer code MacCast6, and also when you use that offer code, you can get 10% off your new account purchase. Everything you need to create an exceptional website, Squarespace. And ShareFile by Citrix. Take all the hassle out of sending and sharing your business files via old methods like email attachments and FTP by using ShareFile. You can try it risk-free for 30 days. Just go to sharefile.com, click on the little radio microphone at the top of the page, and enter my offer code MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. A big thank you to you for your support, for staying subscribed. I look forward to all your comments, your emails, your questions. If you have a show topic you'd like to hear covered, just send email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also send audio comments. I love getting audio comments that I can play on the show. Just attach an MP3, record something on the voice recorder on your iOS device. Works great. Send that in. Or you can call in on the listener hotline. Just call 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. So if you call me, it'll just ring through to a voicemail on Skype, and you can leave a message there. And that works really nicely as well. If you need show notes, links to anything that I've talked about on episodes of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. That's just another great resource where you can share thoughts, ideas, comments, get answers to your questions from other MacCast listeners. The folks hanging out there are really smart. If you haven't checked it out, it's free to sign up. Forum.maccast.com. forum.maccast.com. And then online between shows, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast, or check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/themaccast. I'm also on Google Plus and a million other social media networks, app.net, pretty much Maccast every place you'll find me. So subscribe, follow any place that you prefer, and that'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.